Hello, this is the Trimmed Down podcast version of Tracks of My Life with me, Toby Davey. To catch all my guests' music tracks in full, do listen in to the hour-long version on RNIB Connect Radio every Tuesday at 7 p.m, repeated Thursdays at 1 p.m, and Sundays at 8 p.m. Hello, I'm Toby Davey, and welcome to Tracks of My Life here on RNIB Connect Radio. In Tracks of My Life, we invite a guest to select a number of tracks that mean something to them, probably the first track they may have heard, the first track they may have brought, and a number of tracks that mark moments in their life, as well as one track that they would like to pass on that gives hope to the future. My guest today is Kieran Saeed. Kieran is a blind actor, activist, and trainer, and has recently put on her own play, Crossing Care, about the relationship between a visually impaired person and their support worker. Well, Kieran, welcome to Tracks of My Life.
Great. Absolutely delighted to be here. And what a brilliant introduction. I'm raring to go. Thank you.
How hard was it for you selecting the tracks?
It was actually an interesting experience. My support worker, who we'll probably talk about later on, helped me look up some of the tracks on YouTube and Spotify and all those kind of technical things. It was interesting. It brought back some real, very inspiring and very traumatic memories, but some lovely ones too. And it was really difficult to choose seven tracks because you don't realize how many tracks there are that really have a meaning to you. And then suddenly you have to break them down to seven. It was like, oof. But it was a lot of fun. And I'm actually delighted to be able to share them with everyone.
Well, we're going to start with your first track, which is a soundtrack to a sci-fi TV series that boldly went very much ahead of its time. It's the theme to Star Trek, and Star Trek was on in the 70s. Why did you choose this track, and where does it take you back to?
This track was probably the first musical thing I'd heard that actually had a link to something that was good and exciting. I did think about using all my childhood tracks, like, you know, things like Magic Roundabout and Rhubarb and Custard. And I thought, they were really good tracks, but my support worker got a bit terrified by some of them. They were a bit scary, she said, and she's in her 20s. And I thought, well, maybe not then. But Star Trek is so iconic, and it's kind of had so many series over right onto to the noughties now and the 2000s. So it has got lots of fantastic memories for me, because I was partially sighted until the age of 11 and a half. So I could see that ship flying across the screen, and it always had the fantastic ending of everything got sorted out and it had hope in it, and I liked it. It was when America was a bit more exciting than scary at the minute, if that makes sense. Not too much of a political challenge, but it just has fantastic memories for me. The original, the other thing that was quite interesting was that Captain James T. Kirk, or William Shatner at the time, made that no man will go. And I thought, well, it's very chauvinistic. it has no person will go, or no one, I think now. So, yeah. Oh, no, although there were some quite good. There was the interracial kiss, wasn't there? And there was lots of things that were a lot of challenges that Star Trek did. I remembered that, you know, it challenged a lot of people's perceptions and ideas. And it was ahead of its time, really, if you think about it.
So Star Trek there, and the theme from the original series. It does take me back to the late 70s. For your second track, we move to the 1980s, a very difficult time for many people, with unemployment at a high and lots of protests going on around the country. Where were you at that early 1980s time? Where were you in your life?
I was in my early teens. It was a great time in lots of ways. The 80s was bright colours, lots of challenges. I was in boarding school at the time in Chorleywood College, for those of girls who might be listening to the radio and know Chorleywood College. It was a posh grammar school for girls, and you had to pass an exam to get there. And it was It was a challenging time because you were growing up and you were learning. Boarding school, in a sense, taught you a lot of survival skills. So I was surviving a lot. We had a shop called, it's absolutely true, the shop was called Strawberry Fields, would you believe? It was brilliant. And you had what you called the pound record bag, and you could get 10 records for £1, singles, vinyls. And it was a hodgepodge of records, and you could swap them. And we used to go to the Strawberry Fields and get this 10 batch hodgepodge of records. And I remember thinking one of the records that I got was this particular song we could play. And I was like, I just loved that idea of all of these protests and that music had a reason for being, and it was a reason for being in terms of protesting. And it was exciting. It was challenging and it was sad in some sense. Some of the stuff didn't hit me as much, but then we did have the miners' strike, and that was quite traumatic for our family because we had a shop. We had to close our shop down, more or less, really, or had to give away the sweets for free. And that's and up until then, we were sort of part of the village and seeing where we were, but we weren't absolutely seen as, because we were one of the first Asian families to be there, so we had a lot of racial abuse and stuff. And when the miners' strike happened and we started giving away sweets to the kids for free, we suddenly became the massive, the hub of the community. And I remember that really changed our status. So in a time of horrendous tragedy and difficulties, we actually grew as a family, and in that sense, it was quite inspiring.
And the track that you have chosen is UB40's One in Ten. Did you feel back then that you were sort of one in ten?
If you listen to the words of that song, yeah, you can. And I think it's actually a song of today as well, in a sense. There's a particular one where there's a teenager who lives in, it was a teenager pop star who's on a street without no trees. And I think there's a lot of teenage pop stars, streets without no trees. And there's just all of the other one in tens. And we're back to it now, aren't we, really, in a sense, with the great unemployment happening now. And yeah, I think it did. And I did feel it. And it was the rhythm of the song, it was different. And it was the first song I bought, and I was allowed to buy. And the only reason I was allowed to buy it was because it was a song of protest, and my brothers wanted it as well, so I was allowed to get it.
And there was something back then about actually going to a shop and buying a physical single or album and traipsing to that shop and bringing it back and putting it on the record player. I mean, you had to wait until you got home to play it. It's not like nowadays where, everything's so easy to access.
Yeah, it was an instant access. And as I say, I loved these bags of people. We used to get these bags of, you couldn't get a pound for 10. That was just insane. And it was just great because you could get this hodgepodge of ones as well. So you could get really the ones at the latest ones, and you could get these really old ones, and you just swapped them around. But it was the feeling of putting that record on the turntable, and then lifting the little stylus and the little thing to put, I can't remember what that thing was called, little handle thing where you put it up and you put it on the stylus and you play it. That whole feel was like you had control of the music to some extent. You could stop and start it, and you had to be so precious with it because you didn't want to scratch it. So yeah, it was brilliant.
So that was UB40's One in Ten. Your next track, I think, might be a state of mind to how you were feeling at the time. It's Free by Ultranate, which I think you were playing whilst you were decorating and painting your first flat. Where was your flat? Was it hard making that move? And did you feel free at the time?
Oh my goodness. What a time it was. Yeah, I did. It was really exciting. It was a massive challenge. And the Asian community, a visually impaired girl moving out on her own, was massive in the small community in Newcastle where I was at the time. And my family were very against it. My brothers really didn't want me to move out. My mum was exceptionally supportive in a weird way. She kind of was discreetly supportive. She came and saw the flat with me, and it was a bit of a mess. Someone else had lived in it before, and she had had cats. It was a flat for a wheelchair user, so it was all kind of low level counters and everything, which is one of the reasons why I got it, because they wanted to give it to another disabled person, and I kind of applied and I was very lucky to get it, and she kind of said, yeah, okay, I'll agree to it, but I will only agree to it that you'll have to clear it out yourself discreetly. So every Saturday afternoon I used to leave the house with smartly dressed clothes, pretending I was going shopping or something with my support worker, and then get to the flat, immediately change into my scruffy clothes, put on this record, and just start scrubbing away. And it was just like it was like an utter feeling of freedom. And I remember having my first party in the flat, and I'd cleaned it up and tidied it up, and then suddenly I trashed it all. Which was like, yeah, how could you do that? But it was brilliant. I felt so free. Free to make good and bad decisions. And I did make a lot of bad decisions when you first move out. But I was in my 20s and it was quite late to move out. I was in my late 20s. So it was, in a sense, I felt I was behind everyone else. But in another sense, I was quite ahead in the community wise. So It was, and every time I hear that track, I ultimately automatically want to start cleaning the house. I just can't help it. I hear it, and if I'm sitting in the car, I just suddenly think, oh, I just need to clean something. I need to start moving, because it's a track that you just need to move to, and it has that feeling of freedom. And I just, it was wonderful to be able to, and I've never regretted that independence. And weirdly enough, the flat was in Heaton, but it's near Biker, where Biker Grohl was filmed. So it was like, yay!
Because you were quite a fan of Biker Grohl, weren't you?
Oh yeah, and I loved Ant and Dec. I absolutely loved Ant and Dec. And I was so delighted to be near there. And I used to always think I'd meet them one day, but I never would bump into them on Biker Grohl. But I was like, oh, you never know. But it was an interesting area, because Heaton in itself was, it wasn't fancy, but it wasn't rough and ready. It was in between, and it was a great flat. You never forget your first flat. They always say you never forget lots of firsts of things, and I think that's one of them. You never forget your first flat.
Did you feel lonely at all at that time, or was it just sort of great to be on your own and have your independence?
That's an interesting question, actually. When I first moved out, my mum wanted to stay with me for the first couple of days, and I actually really wanted to leave, but for the bank holiday weekend when I moved in, and then I was saying, please go now, I'm ready to. And then she left, and it was, the first night was quite scary, but the comforting walk for me, the comfort was that I had a police station behind me, and the hilarity of it was the police station was closed. It was a closed down police station, but the thought was, oh, there's a police station there, I'll be okay, it'll be safe, but no, the ground floor flat, and somebody could get through the window, but I'll be safe because there's a closed down police station and nobody will come near it. It was scary for the first couple of days, and then it suddenly became really bizarre. I had my own loo, and I could just go when I wanted, leave the door open, and I could, it was just those weird things. I could eat what I wanted to eat when I wanted to eat. I could stay in my dressing gown and pajamas all day if I chose to. I could buy what I wanted, and all of those things, it just gave me that feeling of freedom. And the other thing it did for me was it gave me status in terms of my world of work, because suddenly I stopped being dependent living at home, and I was seen as somebody professional who lived on her own. And that status, I think, really changed my working career. It did give me that chance and gave me the confidence to eventually move to London, really, which was a whole other ball game. But It was just, I don't know how to explain to somebody what freedom is like. It's like eating lots of ice cream and chocolate and feeling sick afterwards, but you've enjoyed it at the time, I think.
So that was Free by Ultranate, and I think we all want to be free at some stage in our life. The next track is Parting Glass by Ed Sheeran, which is dedicated to Sandy, your husband, who sadly passed away in 2014. I remember doing an interview with you both in the auditorium of the Almeida Theatre in London about access to theatre. And I know you both loved going to see shows together. Could you tell me a little bit about Sandy and your life together?
Yeah, Sandy is and was a wonderful man. And I'm so glad that we had that interview, you know, Toby. At the time, I didn't realise how important that interview was going to be. Somebody who's always inspired me. And I'm so glad that we did that interview that we did at the time, Toby. And I didn't realise how important that interview would be for me, because sometimes I can just Google search it and find it. And I remember us sitting there and in our favourite row. The interview was done at the Almeida Theatre and we were sitting in our favourite row, row A, and we were sitting on our favourite seats, A2 and A3, I think they were. And you were poor you were doing it in front of us. It was quite hilarious. But it was great because it was at the peak of when audio description was kind of flowing and we were having so many shows coming out there and people were really interested and wanting to do stuff to do with audio description. So it was really exciting time for that. But it was also really exciting for us as a couple because we were like growing and we were much more together. And yeah, it was great. And I think what Sandy taught me, and even in the last days of his life, he taught me was resilience and strength. He never failed to amaze me. When things got, he was a bit haphazard with Sandy. He was super talented, but utterly haphazard. And you can remember interviewing him. It was a bit like, and we had to kind of stop the interview and then start it again several times because he got distracted and chatted away with you about something else. It was completely nothing to do with the whole. But he did inspire me in the sense that he was really good at just knowing what to say and when to say it. And even in the last 16 days, because literally when he was diagnosed till he died, there was like 16 days. And in those 16 days, he had to prepare everything. He had to prepare his funeral, he had to prepare his music to play there. He had to decide and make decisions for himself and for me. And we just bought our first house together and we'd moved to Scotland together and we had so much hope together. Mm-hmm. And then suddenly it all changed and all that hope went away and all that everything went and suddenly was, you know. But that song that we're going to play, this song Parting Glass, was the song that he sang on a CD that he looks terrible in. He looks really like he's out to go in the army or something. It looks quite rough and ready on the CD cover. But he made his own CD of songs. And that CD, he sang this particular song and we played it just as he was being buried. And I have to play it with my old, it's called Plex Talk CD thing that you have for playing talking books. And I was holding that in my hand and it was a rainy February day by the time he was buried. And yeah, and it's a song that I play for every time I lose anybody now, you know, like last year I lost my mum and I played it quietly about her. And it's a song that has so much meaning and but it has so much strength in it as well. And I'm just, yeah, I was very lucky to have him in my life because he's given me so many gifts afterwards and his family and stuff. So yeah, it's a really special song. And it's a song I would like to have played at my funeral, I think, whenever that happens.
If Sandy was looking down at you now, would he be proud of what you've done, certainly in the last couple of years?
I think so. I think he'd be exceptionally proud of what I've achieved. I've achieved it because of who he was, not despite. And yeah, I think he'd be very proud. I think he'd be really proud, particularly the performance stuff I'm doing now, the acting and the theatre things and all of that kind of stuff. Yeah, he'd be incredibly proud of that. I think the one thing Sandy wanted for me was settlement and happiness and peace. And I've achieved some of that now. I think this time of year is always hard for everybody. Christmas time is, a lot of people lose a lot of people over Christmas and the New Year. And sort of from November when we got married, right the way through till sort of mid-January, it's always a tough time for me. But I now realise that it's also quite a nice peaceful time because I can remember things and I remember the good things now. So yeah, I think he would be proud. I've got a lot more to achieve for him, a lot more changes to make and a lot more things to inspire lots of other vision impaired people to do. But yeah, I hope he would be.
Of all the money that I had, I spent it in good company, and all the harm.
What a wonderful song, The Parting Glass, there by Ed Sheeran. And I can't really understand why he had it as a hidden track on his album Plus, but there we go. A wonderful song. The next track that you have chosen was featured in your recent play, Crossing Care, which was a play about the relationship between a visually impaired person and their support worker, which had some funny and some very moving moments in it, and some situations which I think many visually impaired people have been in and experienced. What is the song and why did you choose it to be part of your play?
Well, it was particularly chosen because I wanted to go and see her in concert, really, which is the reason, but we haven't got any more live concerts happening at the time. And she was going to be playing at the Hydro in Glasgow. And I was like, really excited. And I was going about to buy her tickets to go and see Camila Cabello. And I was, it's a song that's got lots of dance and it's a duet. And in the play, we have a detective character. And as the song was meant to kind of represent me and this detective character singing a duet, and also my support worker, Spanish, and Senorita Spanish. So it was had a lot of things to do with that. And it's a fun song, but it also kind of gave us a lot of ideas of how to do the play itself. We kind of did it within. We performed it within 3 weeks. Sorry, not even 3 months, 3 weeks. So it was great. Writing that play was kind of difficult, but interesting in the sense that we could write it about ourselves. It was me and my support worker. It was written during lockdown, so you had to have all the challenges of not all meeting up and then not meeting up. And the play was about explaining people about carers, but about forgotten carers, because we had this thing about clap for carers, and people always forgot about the people that come into people's homes, or support workers, and people who had to work with disabled people quite closely. And if people forgot about that, and it was really important to be able to have them represented and to tell the stories, and also to tell how we as visually impaired and disabled people, we lose our arms and legs or our eyes. Every 1 year we lose them because they suddenly become, you know, that worker leaves and somebody else new comes along. And so it's that ever-changing cycle of workers. And the song was kind of a song we were going to play, and then we worked out we couldn't do it because you had to get performing rights, and we kind of thought we're just too complicated. So in the end, it's our hidden song that we know reminds us of the play. And reminds me of a support worker who had a very, very difficult time of, you know, that we're all experiencing, changed my life. She was there when my mum passed away, helped to clear out the house, helped to rebuild my life over a year in which we lost so much. And yet she made me gain so much and gave me the right to be able to perform and gave me the right to write and hopefully be one of the first visually impaired Scottish, visually impaired Asian women performing in Scotland. So it should be even more amazing, really.
And I don't think many people sort of realise that relationship between somebody and a support worker or care or whatever you want to call it, because there is a relationship and it goes deeper than just, you know, sort of reading out things or guiding you around the place. It's much more than that, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a really, really deep, powerful and strong relationship. It's you share your life with that person, and that person has to share some of their life with you, otherwise it just doesn't work. And you have to reach an equity, and you also have to have confidence with each other. You have to be confident and be confidential. And it's also it's sad when they leave, but you know they have to leave because they've got to live their lives and you've got to live your life, and then you have to restart all over again. So yeah, it's a tough one, but it's I never regret any of my support workers. I've never regretted any of them. They've all been really great, even the ones who've kind of slightly been amiss. it's every one of them has taught me something. And I think those stories have to be told, because I think the other thing, the other way around about that is how we as, you know, visually impaired or disabled people have to work with support workers. It goes two ways. It's not only teaching how support workers have to work with us, but how we have to work with them, and that kind of relationship of training and teaching and the mistakes that we're bound to make, but how we can avoid them in some senses if we listen to each other's sort of attunement. And in the play, obviously, I did make quite a few mistakes, and it's trying to kind of understand those and to learn how to teach somebody your ways. And to accept that they're going to do them slightly differently, but that's going to be not bad at all. And it's a great song, isn't it? It's a great song of its time.
Shawn Mendes and Camila Cabello. And Senorita. The next track that you have chosen is one I think we probably all know, but perhaps not this version. One we have all probably sung at New Year's Eve, but probably don't remember singing. Why this particular version of Auld Lang Syne?
Well, I wanted to have a jazzy version, and it took us ages, and we kind of ended up having to call on Sandy's niece, who's also my carer as well, and she kind of found it for me. And it's a really jazzy version, but it's my Scottish family, and it's about Scotland, and it will always have a massive importance for me, because wherever we used to come up to Scotland, Sandy and I used to always play this song together. And it's a song that has such incredible fond memories for me. And because you play it, you know, you're bringing in the new, wishing out the old, and it's just fantastic. It's a bit hilarious, this particular version, but, you know, my Scottish family in Scotland is now my home. It's what I've chosen where to live. And it's where I want to kind of end my time, really. And it's where I want to make my challenges. And it is a brilliantly exciting place to live in Scotland, particularly now, and particularly where I live. I live really near the Parliament. So I'm in, one of the things I do is a cross-party group. And so I can do lots of challenging of Parliament. And Parliament's so near, you can touch it and taste it. And it's fantastic. And there's just so many other exciting things that happen within sort of Scotland. So for me, it's I'm really lucky to be here, and really lucky to have my lovely Scottish family, which is, you know, Sandy's family, and they've looked after me since he's gone. And it was a massive decision to make, because I literally moved from one part of the UK to another. So I was living in London, and then I moved right the way from London to Edinburgh. How far could you move across the rail line? You know what I mean? But it, you know, I've never regretted it now, and it is a song that just captures everything I want about Scotland. It's a song that everyone remembers about Scotland, and I think it's going
perhaps not this version of it.
But I wanted to have something that was a bit more fun, because it's such a seriousy song. Sometimes you just have to have a bit of a quirkiness. I like a bit of a quirky twist to everything. So yeah.
Do you feel you're accepted being an English person in Scotland?
Gosh, yes. I actually always feel embarrassed, because I'm often asked to represent certain things to do with Scotland. And I come out with me with my Englishy voice coming out, and I'm thinking, oh, I'm not really allowed to do this. But I was welcomed. It took me a while to be warmed into Edinburgh. Edinburgh's quite an interesting place, because it's not meant to be a cold city, but it's a city of reserve. Glasgow is much more of a warm and welcoming city, and Edinburgh is a bit more of a city of reserve, and you have to establish yourself. And it took me a while to kind of establish myself. It took me a couple of years, 2 or 3 years, and I did an R. In fact, in one time, I did think about living on a canal boat in Camden. That's how kind of odd I was about, should I live in Scotland? I was thinking, oh, I'll go and live on a canal boat. And I was actually thinking, no, that's really great, until you had to realise that you had to move the canal boat every sort of 6 months. And I was thinking, the afternoon, learn a new route to get home. How am I going to do that? So that changed my boat mind about moving on a canal boat. Yeah, it was a brilliant, brilliant part of the world to live in. And yeah, it's really hard to explain.
I suppose it's a place and a feeling of being at home It's all sorts of different things. It's not just one thing or another. It's a feeling that, as you say, you possibly can't explain, but you know you're there when you're there.
I think the thing that makes you really realize you're established somewhere is when you walk down the street or you get on a bus and somebody recognizes you. And when that started happening to me in Edinburgh, I knew then I'd been established, that people knew me and people recognized me. And Edinburgh is quite a small city, really, in lots of ways. It's like a mini London. And as soon as that started happening, I knew I was established and I knew that I was welcomed. And it was then that I realized part of it was my own issues. It wasn't so much people in Edinburgh. It was a lot to do with myself, that I had my own reserve and my own fears about letting myself go and be part of something and challenging myself. But now I have. I don't regret it. But yeah, I think it's hard for anybody visually impaired moving to anywhere new on their own. And it kind of happened by default that I moved here on my own. You know, obviously I moved initially with Sandy, but then I ended up living here on my own. And so it's by default that happened. But I think for anybody visually impaired, whenever you move anywhere on your own, it's tough. And you have to really learn to have a lot of inner strength and a lot of toughness on the outside, but a lot of softness from the inside to let people in. And that's quite hard to do. And there's lots of challenges, stupid little challenges, like just getting your bus pass and all your other little things that you need to do and your routes to learn around everywhere. And everybody knows everybody in the little clubs that you go to. And then you've got to establish your own personality without treading on anyone else's toes. And so suddenly all of that has now established itself. You know, I'm a member of a choir and I do lots of stuff with RNIB up here in Scotland. And so there's lots more things that I'm doing and it's a lot more exciting, but it's taken a while to get there. But I don't regret that while. I think that while it's a right while. So.
I think the real Big Fish's version of Auld Lang Syne would get anybody up on the dance floor on Christmas Eve, that fantastic track. Now, your final track is possibly a bit of a floor filler, as one might say, getting people up onto the floor and dancing, or perhaps onto the sofa. Why have you chosen I've Got a Feeling by Black Eyed Peas as a track that you would like to pass on to give hope for the future?
Well, I always have a feeling that tonight's going to be the night that at last we'll have the pubs open and we'll all be able to get out and go clubbing. Oh, I should be saying I'll be clubbing in my 50s, but you never know. I just think it's the song that we need, isn't it? It's at the evenings that we get the ridiculous announcements that there's going to be another lockdown or there's going to be something else happening. So I wanted something that could just say, right, this is going to shake up the new year and we're going to be out there one time and we're going to be enjoying ourselves and we're just going to have fun. Because I played a few. I thought of a few songs. And then I thought, no, that's not going to work. No, that doesn't actually tell. It doesn't shout enough. So I wanted something that you could shout to and you could just like, and I do feel it's one of those songs you can yell with and you can just dance that. And it's tonight's going to be the night that we can actually get out and party and time. Yeah, and don't we need a good time? I really think we need a good time. So yeah, this is the song. And certainly I'm having a good time too. I'm going to have a few drinks to this song, nothing else.
Well, thank you, Kieran, very much for sharing your tracks of my life with me here on RNIB Connect Radio.
Thank you very much and best of luck for everybody for the coming year.
I got a feeling that tonight's gonna be a good